This is a live educational teletalk that is being recorded. The podcast is provided by Terry O'Hara, professional animal communicator, and it is the property of AnimalWise, LLC. Please do not duplicate, sell, or forward this recording. If you have any questions or comments regarding the content of this talk or animal communication, they can be directed to Terry's website at www.animalwise.com. That's www.animalwise.com. Enjoy the talk. Why a teleclass? Some of you have already been on the teleclasses of the cat and the dog the months, 2 months prior. So this is a little bit redundant, but I just wanted to say thank you for all of you for participating in this. And my goal with these teleclasses is to keep them short, keep them concise, keep them informative, keep them fun, and let you go on with your day and feel like you really got your money's worth out of it. Keep them very affordable as well. And so that's why I purposely keep them short. Obviously, the topic of horses or any topic, could be an all-day workshop, but these are meant to just kind of skim the surface, touch on some things, and mostly inspire us to just continue to love these wonderful species and to continue learning from these wonderful beings. Also, they're convenient, easy, and fun, so that's a good thing. And also, I'm finding that more and more people, I've noticed over the last couple of years with my business, more and more people, like all of you on the phone, are finding each other. We're all starting to find each other, those that love animals, those that believe that there's more to animals than maybe some people believe. And I think it's nice to be with kindred spirits, and so it's also a nice time to unite. And as some of you know, my classes, when you've taken the beginning and then the intermediate class, I also hold mentoring circles, which is for people to come together and practice and connect with one another and practice with the animals, which I'm finding is really turning into quite a wonderful spiritual experience for everybody, as well as tons of fun with animals. So it's just a nice way for all of us who love animals to come together, even if it's brief on a Saturday morning. Okay, and with that, I would like to introduce Pam Baca. I'm a very proud mentor to introduce Pam because Pam went through my apprenticeship program. And Pam, have you been up and running for over a year now?
I have, yeah, about January of last year.
That's what I thought, January 07, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Uh-huh. So she's been doing her own business. It's been taking off. She's been doing really wonderfully. We've become very good friends. And she's got two magnificently wonderful horses that if you have taken my intermediate class at her home, you know J.D. and Barnabas. They are a part of the talk today. They, of course, instructed Pam on things we should talk about. So I really felt like bringing somebody in who has horses, who understands horses even deeper than I. I've never owned my own horse, or owned is the wrong word, but I've never had a horse in my life. Though I love horses and I work with horses, I thought it would be really nice to give you, the listeners, a balanced opportunity from Pam's perspective as someone who loves horses and has had horses for years, as well as her animal communicator expertise, and then mine as well. So the reason we're talking about horses today is because they're wonderful. We all know that. And I wanted to tell you of a story that touched my heart many years ago. Sometimes people ask me, actually, when you do your consultations, it must be so hard when they're emotional. If somebody is sick or dying or, the dog attacked the cat. I mean, there's surely all kinds of trauma that can come up in consultations. And they don't usually affect me, Terry, the person, emotionally. I can feel the people's emotions and the animal's emotions, and I can be very present with it. But this is a story of a time when I was doing a consult and tears were pouring down my face. And of course, the young lady knew. I told her, this is just so powerful. I'm crying with you, and I need you to know that. And because we were over the phone, and I said, I may need to pause for a moment. There was no way I could get a grip, as we call it when we try to stop crying, because it was so beautiful. Is why I was crying. And so this young lady, I'm just going to call her Sue. Sue had a horse, and I'm for confidentiality reasons, I'm just protecting names. So I'm just going to call him Bill. And Sue had a horse that she absolutely loved, and she was a young woman. She was about 19, and her horse was purchased for her by her mother. Her mother and father had gone through a divorce when she was about 17, and I feel from what she shared with me, the mother was a little bit feeling guilty that her divorce had affected the daughter so much, so she wanted to give her something she always wanted, and that was a horse. And so the first consultation I ever did with Sue was to just go meet the horse, and, you know, she was so excited and so happy, and she had had him about 6 months, absolutely beautiful guy, and, you know, it was just one of those really fun, delightful consults, because it was all about, isn't he great, and what does he want me to know, and does he know how much I love him, and I want to do this with him and this with him, and so it was a fun, you know, light, easy, yet very complete and deep consultation in person. And she was very excited about her journey with him, and he was so powerfully in love with her, and he said he had come to heal her heart, and that he had never met anybody like her, and he never wanted to be with anybody else. And she said she totally understood that no matter what happened. She said she was getting ready to go to college, but she was taking him with her. No matter what, he was always going to be with her. And then a couple years later, she called me to do a consult, and she said, my mom is selling the horse. And I gasped and thought, oh, no. And she was crying on the phone, and I said, is it an option for you to buy him? And she said, no, my mom bought him as an investment. And it was so hard to hear that because, first of all, I don't respect that, and that's my own personal thing, but I don't respect animals as an investment, you know, that concept. And obviously neither did Sue. And she said, I've tried everything, Terry. I've got to tell him that he's being sold. We have to break the news to him that he's being sold. And so I went into it gently, and I explained to him that the reason she'd been sad, because she said she'd been wrapping her arms around him and crying, and, I mean, these two loved each other like there was no tomorrow. And for me to have to be the one to help him understand that they were going to have to part permanently was probably one of the toughest consults I've ever done. And so the tears started coming down my face. We started gently explaining to him. I tried to help him understand what an investment meant. And I know that there are expensive horses out there. I never pay attention to breeds or cost or any of that. And at one point in the conversation, she said her mom had spent $150,000 on this horse. And to her, he was her companion. She wasn't showing him off or worried about ribbons or anything. And it was her mother's choice to get her a gift, but when the stock market started to change, she decided she needed that money back. And so we had to explain to the horse all of this. And Bill said to us, well, it's not an option. I'm not going to ever leave her. We were meant to be together. I've been sent to her. And so she cried, and I cried, and we tried to help him understand. And so he said, well, you know, she can try and sell me, but it's not going to work. And so Sue, you know, said, there's nothing I can do about it. And, of course, because I learned from her, because he was a very expensive horse, the mom had to ship him to Florida to a very special ranch where high-end people were going to see high-end horses. And so it was a whole journey we had to prepare him for. And he was a very gentle but strong and well-behaved horse. As soon as he got to Florida, he turned into a complete maniac. Not in a crazed way, but every time he was gentle, he was fine, but every time someone would climb on him to check him out for purchase, he would act like a stallion, and he would go crazy and jump and throw him off and do all kinds of antics. And so then Sue calls me and tells me, my mom wants you to do a consult with him to tell him to calm down because nobody's going to buy him. And I refused. I said, that I can't do. I can't intervene with that. I can't tell a horse what to do in order to be sold, which is not what he wants. So she called me back probably 2 or 3 months later, and she said, well, I hate to get hopeful, but the people in Florida have asked him to leave because there's no way they can sell him. So now my mom is having him shipped to New York. So here's this beautiful horse being shipped to New York, where he lived for 6 months, where people tried to buy him, where people tried to connect with him, where everybody checked him out, where a trainer worked with him. And she called me one day, so this whole process from the time she fell in love with him to the time of this phone call that I'm about to tell you about was probably about 3.5 years or something, maybe 4. She called one day and she said, Terry, guess what? We need to talk to Bill and tell him he's coming home. My mom called me in tears and said, I get it. I get it that you and Bill are supposed to be together, and I will never interrupt and interfere with that relationship again, and I'm sending your horse back. And I was so inspired by this boy and his power and his determination and his sureness that he simply was not going to be purchased. That's all there was to it. And they are now living happily ever after. And I actually, since I'm working on a book, I met with her and had her tell the story into a tape recorder, so that hopefully will be in my book someday. And that changed my life about horses into a much deeper perspective. They're so spiritual and they're so powerful, and we often don't give them enough credit. I'm sure the people on this line give them credit, but in society we don't. So I wanted to share that as a beautiful beginning to honor horses. And also to say that so much is expected of horses that it's time for us to let them speak up, because our culture has decided ways in which we expect things from horses, all the way, of course, to mistreatment, which we're not going there, but to just, you know, shows and certain kind of riding and living in a stall, the many things that we expect of horses. I believe, as a culture, forgotten to stop and listen and check in with them on how they're doing. So I feel this call and Pam's expertise and listening through her horse guides that this is to honor all the horses that many of us have loved, perhaps worried about, perhaps been sad for, and also have celebrated. And as we know, the pure love that comes through animals, all animals, and horses, of course, is all about the human-animal bond. And so some of you on the line have your own horses, some of you work with horses, so this is to honor that as well. It's all about relationships with you and your horse, with you and your horses and other people, and with your horses and other animals. And horses vary as much as people do. So one of the things we have to learn to do, and again, for those of you that have already heard this, it might be a little redundant, but we have to begin to look at life from the animal's perspective. So when I meet with a horse, I was telling Pam at the beginning of this call, I said, since we're being recorded, let's talk about what we love about horses. And one of the things I love about them is they're so big and yet so gentle, you know, that I want to walk up and kiss and hug and hold them, even though they're these giant creatures. Of course, not all of them like that. But you have to just be honest with them, because if that's what you're feeling and you admire them so, you have to learn to be able to approach a horse and admire them and let them know what your intentions are, because you understand from their perspective that might be hard. Pam's going to go into more details in a minute here about their perspective, so we'll do more on that. Also, it's very important, as with all animals, for us to not box them into stereotypes of breed or size or background. And I would like to ask Pam here to just comment about some issues or concepts people may have regarding breeds.
For example, everybody knows thoroughbreds, and everybody, you know, assumes that a thoroughbred is high-strung, hard to handle, flighty, kind of like the dumb blonde of the horse world, and that's not necessarily so. You know, everybody has to remember that they're all individuals. You know, Shetland ponies are known to be kind of crotchety. A lot of that's mishandling. You know, they could be the sweetest things in the world. The big Clydesdales are known to be big lugs, and as a rule, they are known as the gentle giants. But every, you know, people that do know horses or have heard anything about horses, the minute you say a certain breed, you instantly get a perception, not unlike what we do with people. And if we remember to realize they are individuals and give them a chance, they may surprise us. I mean, they're all wonderful. You just have to believe that and not get preconceived ideas.
Right. And to remember, as you meet them, meet who they are as an individual. They have their own personality, and they definitely have a background. But it's the individual that you're connecting with, not just a horse or just a breed of horse or just a horse that has had a bad story. And, you know, their common request is for us to honor who they are as an individual with a purpose. They come to this world with a purpose, and it's sad to me how many of them don't perhaps get to follow through on their purpose, but I believe all spirits are very powerful, and if they have to come back to honor that purpose, they'll come back in another body in another time. But they want you to know, the horses of the world, that they are an individual and they have a purpose, and so they welcome you to get to know them from that level first and foremost. And also the message from the horses that I often get is, let me grow and change even if it confuses you, because I'm on a spiritual journey too. And so sometimes I find with people who are in relationship with horses is they get frustrated if the horses start acting differently. Mostly, I believe, because there's this concept of safety. And so if you're used to your horse behaving a certain way on a trail or in an arena or whatever, and they start to change and behave differently, it can create fear for the human on them because it makes them feel vulnerable, understandably so. So there's this fine line between controlling a horse for your own personal safety versus being with a horse and honoring who they are. So they want us to know that they go through changes just like we do. And, of course, they can go through a change because of the weather. They can go through a change because of a relationship of another horse coming or going. And they can go through a change because of relationships with humans, or just their own spiritual growth. So they want to remind us of that, too. So if they're acting differently or we find them to be seeming funny or whatever, maybe to stop and say, what might be going on for you? You know, you seem to be different. You seem more high-strung. You seem more relaxed. You seem more joyful. You seem more skittish. So begin to think about what might be going on for them before you hop on and just expect them to perform or accomplish something. And then just to reiterate, each being has his or her own personality first and then a history second. And the reason I want to emphasize that is because many, many, many horses did not have good starts because they were trained roughly, because they're bounced around, they're bought, they're sold, they're bought, they're sold, they're bought, they're sold, they're neglected, they're beaten, all kinds of stories. I believe in the horse world, more of that occurs with horses than with dogs and cats. So with that said, a lot of clients will call me and they'll say, well, I have a new horse in my life and, you know, he's very, very skittish and I'm sure it's because the man who had him before whipped him. Well, maybe the man who had him before did whip him, but he also might have been born kind of shy. And so horses would like you to begin to start to look at who are they, who's their personality, because just like humans, I mean, we can have, you know, three children in a family, same parents, same upbringing. One can be really shy. One can be really outgoing. One can be really snotty. You know, they can have all their own individual personalities that come first, and so do animals. So the horses want us to remember, get to know me and my personality. Don't get caught up in what my history was. Don't get caught up in the trauma or the bad memories or sit there and think, well, I know the reason you won't lunge like I need you to is because the guy was a brute on you before or the woman trained you too hard or whatever, because that doesn't help the animal move forward. Learn who they are, learn their personality, sense them, feel them, and then honor that as you ask for new accomplishments and new process to occur, and the history can go by the wayside. Because as I teach in my classes, if we're busy thinking about somebody hurting them or how scared they are, then we're keeping them stuck in that energy. They read our minds, they read our hearts, they feel it, they understand what we're talking about, and they wonder why we're talking about it or thinking about it or being in it when they're not in it anymore. They're in the moment, and they're with you, and they're with beings that love them. So real important for us to put history aside and honor their personalities. Okay, and now Pam is going to talk about how horses will be horses.
And I think we all have experienced that if we've been around them. First and foremost, horses need to feel safe. That goes above food, above shelter, above mating, above everything. They're prey animals. I'm sure everybody's experienced, if you've been around horses, a plastic bag blowing in front of you on a ride and the horse just acts like it's a monster and freaks out and runs away with you or shies. You know, to them, it's, you know, we're thinking, well, it's just a plastic bag. To the horse, it's not. You know, they have hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years of being a prey animal, and what has kept them alive is that survival instinct. You know, what they smell, what they see, what they listen for. You know, a plastic bag, it's a sudden movement, and it's a sudden sound. You know, to them, they don't want to stop and wait and go, oh, let's study this. Oh, yes, it's a plastic bag, because by then they could become someone's dinner. So any sudden movement will startle them because their heart tells them to get the heck out of there. They're going to smell when they're out on a ride, stop and sniff the air. You know, do I smell a predator? Has the air changed? Is something different? They're going to listen. I've been out on my horse, and he'll stop and perk his ears up, and 10 minutes later, you know, some wild animal will walk into our view, and it's just amazing how he hears that 10 minutes before I have any inkling as to what's going on. being prey animals, you have to remember it's an incredible feat for them to even let us get on their backs. They perceive us as predators. You know, we smell like meat, most of us, and they're vegetarians. And the fact that they let something that smells like McDonald's get on their back, knowing that that could be something that could eat them, you know, that's their instinct. It goes back thousands of years that it's an incredible leap of trust for them to even say, okay, I'll take a chance on this, that it's going to be okay. And to me, that's an incredible lesson. You know, we could all learn to trust more by being like them and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to trust that it's going to be okay and that you're going to take care of me and not hurt me. They're extremely good at taking care of themselves. Left to their own devices, they know exactly what plants and herbs to eat for their health. Most horses, unfortunately, are kept in confined environments and are totally dependent upon us as to what they get to eat, if there's any variety to it. You know, that's, thank goodness the horse industry has come a long way so far as introducing herbs, natural vitamins to keep them healthy. I have a horse I had many years ago that as he got older, he would eat nothing but milk thistle if I would take him out to graze. And I thought that was the strangest thing in the world because they're prickly, and I thought, what could be good about that? And then I learned that milk thistle is very good for the liver. And as he got older, he got diagnosed with liver problems, and he was self-medicating. You know, that's amazing. That, you know, teaches us a lot about how to take care of ourselves. Horses are, first of all, equines, and a lot of times we project onto them what we want them to do and how we want them to perform. There's so many human errors on the perception of our horses and so many high expectations. You know, like when you have a horse and you're boarding it and you five, you know, a couple hours to go to the boarding stable at dinner time and you expect the horse to want to just hop on the trail and go with you, you know, that might not be part of his agenda. We have very high expectations on, you know, when it's time for a lesson, they have to be ready for that lesson. We get upset with them when they're maybe not in the mood for a lesson that day, or it's a mare and she's in estrus and last thing on her mind is performing for us. And oftentimes the horse is doing that for us. It has nothing to do with what they want to do. They could care less of where their foot placement is as long as it's underneath them. So, you know, kind of important to remember that they're individuals and, you know, that we should treat them as individuals. One of the most important things I have learned about horses is the importance of play. My horse, JD, told me to be sure and talk about that. That's the first thing I asked him. I said, what should I bring up this talk? He's like, talk about balance. You know, remind everybody that horses just want to have fun. My horses have taught me that they like to play tag, they like to play hide and seek, and it's all part of balance. My horse, JD, is a champion fox trotter. He's won everything. The reason he has done it is he knows the importance of balance. The other horses would go out there stressed, taking it very seriously. He would go out there and have fun with it. You know, when he was done winning his trophy, he would go out and roll in the sand and buck and kick and go off and be a horse. You know, it's all about balance. And to me, that's perhaps the most important lesson we can learn from horses is, you know, don't get out of balance in any way. When you do, that's when we all become upset and we're not happy in our heart. The way that JD taught me to play hide-and-seek is one time I was going out looking for him, and he was behind a tree, and he saw me, and he popped his head behind the tree where I couldn't see him. I thought, what are you doing? And he has a very playful personality. So I kind of went off to the side, and he ran behind another tree and was looking at me, and I thought, I'll be darned, he wants to play hide-and-seek. So I hopped behind a tree, and I knew darn well he could see me because my butt's big, but, you know, he kept started creeping forward, then he started arching his neck and snorting, and so I jumped out, and I went, yeah, and he thought that was the most fun he'd ever had. If a horse could actually grin from ear to ear, and he snorted and bucked and ran off, and then he stopped and waited for me to do it again, and so luckily I live out in the hills, and I play hide-and-seek with my horses rather often, and we play tag and ball, and you know, it relaxes me. It's as much for me as it is for them, and when I'm stressed, that's when they tend to want to play more because they're trying to help me to achieve that balance, and that's a great thing. One of the other things about horses I find very entertaining is how incredibly curious they are. I think that goes back to the part that they are indeed a prey animal, and they have to be curious because that's what helped keep them alive for many years. But also, when they are balanced and healthy and happy, you could put a box out in a pasture. You could put anything. I've hung jackets on the railing, and I come back, and my horse, JD, is flinging it in the air and turned it into a wonderful new toy. The importance of curiosity is that activities stimulate their minds. They don't just stand there in a stall. You know, they need to be healthy and whole and have their minds alert. So the more curious they are, it keeps their minds sharp. one of the things that I really find interesting about horses is they all have a purpose, just like Terry was saying earlier. You know, we expect them to just hang out in the stall and just go yee-haw when we show up and want to go on a ride, but they have their own life journey. And my horse Barnabas told me the important thing he wanted me to bring up was how many horses choose to work with people one-on-one to help. You know, there's horses that work with policemen, and you think of a horse in the middle of a crowd where there's a riot, that goes against everything a horse believes in for safety. You know, there's noises, there's racket, there's bad energy, and yet there's some horses that choose to work in that environment for the safety of all, and that's incredible. I know of people that have worked with horses with strokes. In fact, I believe there's somebody on the line that works at one of the ranches where they do horse therapy, where they work with children who can't walk or autistic children or troubled teens. Or I actually know of a woman who has seizures, and her horse was a prized Arabian, but he was so erratic in his behavior, nobody wanted him, and they were going to put him down. And he and this woman found one another, and when she's getting ready to have a seizure, this horse lets her know. He starts nodding his head, and he'll start putting his hoof out in a certain manner, and he's warning her to get down because she's got to get down on the ground, be seated or lying down because she has very violent seizures. And this horse has helped keep this woman alive. And in return, this woman has helped keep this horse alive because nobody wanted him. And around this woman, he's like a docile puppy because he has found his purpose in helping her to live her life in a safe manner. The thing about horses, they mend your spirit, they mend your body. They're just incredible fun. I get emotional about that because mine have done that for me. Now, the one thing I want to talk to everybody about that I find really, really important in having a relationship is the bonding time. You know, a lot of people I know have their horse and they ride the horse, they put the horse up, they go home. It's so, so important to groom the horse, to have hands-on. They're very, very spiritual beings. They're very sensitive, and they love touch. The more you touch them, you can almost stroke them like a cat, and they practically purr. And it's so much fun to just be with a horse. It's almost like a meditation to just go out and walk with the horse and listen to it chew and to, you know, look around at nature and notice the things that they notice. And I think that they find that important for us because it's part of them teaching us how to be one with nature and how to be in our hearts. It's incredible fun. I don't get much done around my barn because half the time I just go out and hang out with my horses and watch them, and I feel so good and relaxed when I go in, but then I still have work to do. And another thing that's real, real important when working with any animal, and especially horses, because they're basically 1,000 pounds of muscle, is to be present with the horse. I have one of my horses, Barnabas, and when I just lunge him, which is in a big arena, and they kind of work in a circle, the walk, trot, and canter, and I could do that without a lunge whip or without a lunge rope, anything. I just focus on what I want him to do, and he'll start cantering. But if for just a brief moment I get distracted and start thinking about something I need to do later, or if I'm out of the moment for a second, Barney will just stop and turn around and look at me like, hey, you know, you're distracted. And he waits for me to refocus, and then he'll continue. But, you know, they're so tuned into us 100% of the time on where our head is at and where our heart is at. And, you know, that's a good lesson for us to kind of do a check-in with ourselves and realize where we're at. I'm trying to think of anything else I might have covered. One of the things for everybody to remember is to think about the purpose you're expecting from your horses. You know, a lot of times we have certain high expectations of our animals just as we do of ourselves, and a lot of time the horse will accommodate us because that's important to us. For example, dressage. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And in Terry's experience and mine as well, most of the time the horse is doing it because they realize how important it is to their person. That, you know, they don't really care about the fancy little steps, although there are those that enjoy competing and, you know, love the perfectionism. They're similar to their person, but mostly they're doing it for us. So it's important to remember, what are your expectations of your horse? You know, is that something he wants to do? Does he want to be involved in this activity? Maybe he doesn't want to go to shows. He just wants to go out on the trail and be a horse. And you know, if you have him train a lot or if you have him do shows, give him equal time out in the pasture to just be a horse, you know, or go spend some time with him and go on a trail ride and balance it out, because it makes it a lot more fun for both of you, and you bond a lot more. Can you think of anything else to add to any of that, Jerry?
I think what I wanted to talk a little bit more here, Pam, about is their physical body, because I think that, unfortunately, a lot of horses get injuries. And if you want to add anything after I talk a little bit, feel free. The physical body for the horse is structured to not stand around. It's structured to move, and it's structured to stretch, and it's structured to run. And unfortunately, we're doing a disservice when we need them to just stand around, and especially if they're standing around in cold or standing around in mud. So it's very important. Even I tell clients that if a horse is new to them, I just did a consult yesterday with a woman who this horse is pretty new to her, and she's always wanted a horse her whole life. She just went through a divorce, and her present to herself was to get a horse. But she doesn't know horses very well at all yet, so he keeps asking, who's my human? Where's the relationship? He's confused because the trainer rides him more than she does. And so here I was connecting through her heart to this horse and saying, well, your human wants you to know that she's really happy, you're in their life, blah, blah, blah. And his answer was, well, who's my human? I don't get that. So it's very important for us to honor the relationship and then to be with them. So her issue is that, well, I can't ride very well yet, so the trainer works in the arena, but I really want to get out on trails. And I said, well, then go walk him. Take him on a walk. You know, I know it's not the ideal, and it's not what everybody does, but if you want to be with him and you want him to understand you're his person and he needs the movement and the stretching and the exercise, take him for a walk. And she thought that was, like, you know, the million-dollar answer. It's like she hadn't even thought about just taking him for a walk and being able to walk by his side and talk to him and get out into the woods with him. Because if she's not feeling safe and not feeling ready, that's absolutely fine. But that doesn't mean he should be cooped up until someday the trainer says, all right, you know, you're ready for a ride. So it's very important for people to remember what is their physical body needing. And obviously we've all heard of when they have the digestive issues and that can be so dangerous that they can die, and a lot of that is because they're cooped up and or of course cheap hay and you know, mistakes with food or them eating the wrong thing. But again, if we honor their body, we have to remember their body is meant to move. My most beautiful images that I come up with when I think of a horse is a horse running in a field. I mean, is there anything more beautiful than that? Just seeing the joy, seeing how light they are on their feet, though they might be over 1,000 pounds, and how graceful they can be, and to see them running and playing is what they absolutely need. And just like, you know, we shouldn't be having dogs being crates all day long, and it is a compromised version to take them out to dog parks and let them run, and maybe they have to wait for us while we're at work, and maybe that's not ideal. It's not like living on a farm, but it's okay, and they've accommodated to that, and so have their bodies for the most part. I'm finding, though, with the clients that I work with that call with horse issues, a lot of times their bodies are not accommodating to just standing around in a stall, and neither are their spirits. Pam, is there anything in particular you would want to add about body functions or body injuries?
I think that's why there are a lot of injuries. I know a lot of people at the high-end farms, and their horses are in a stall until they take them out for lesson or training or a show, and then they wonder why they end up getting ligament issues or tendon issues. You know, they, just like anything else, they're an athlete. They need exercise. They need to stretch. They need to play. And you know, that's one of the first things they have you do if you've got a horse that's colicking. Walk it. You know, you need to get that movement going. That is extremely important. That's what they're meant to do. Out in the wild, they can roam miles and miles and miles to food and water, and, you know, they don't have to have their hooves trimmed. They don't need anything for colic because they're healthy, because they're getting that physical stimulation, and that's what they're meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so far as people walking along, just, you know, like this gal you were talking about, that's one of the best ways to get to know that animal. You know, it's just like when you're developing a relationship with a person, spend time with them. She doesn't have to be in the saddle, and she can watch his reactions and what he looks for and what's interesting to him by just standing there next to him, putting her arm over his back, and getting to know him and building a bond with him, because if you've got that bond on the ground, you're going to have it in the saddle.
Mm-hmm. And as Pam referred to earlier, in regard regards to, you know, they're reading us. They want to know, what do you need from me? You know, you need me to lift my feet a certain way? Okay, I'll work on it. So it's very important for everybody to remember when working with horses that they are reading our minds like the other animals. But I find that horses read it a little differently than dogs and cats. Dogs and cats are often just busy being dogs and cats and having fun. And then if there's a little thought about a walk, yahoo. Or if there's a little thought about, I need you to go lay down, okay. Because they're more the prey animal, and because they still, to me, have more of their wild spirit in them than the domesticated cat and dog, what I find is they're constantly reading us like a radar screen. And so if we're sending confusing messages, like Pam said, if we get distracted, that's a confusing message. And it's not that it's not okay to get distracted, but just be with it and correct it when you can. But more importantly, when we're wanting them to accomplish something, so for example, when I told this woman to take her horse for a walk, she thought that was a great idea, and then all of a sudden fear came up for her, and she said, what if he takes off on me? And I said, well, then imagine the walk going exactly like you would want it, because he's wondering the whole time you're walking next to him, what are we doing? What do you need from me? What's my purpose? What do you expect from me? Not because he's thinking, you know, where are my marching orders, but because he naturally feels that way. If he's hanging out with another horse in a field, he's doing the same thing. What are you doing? Are you eating? Should I come over there and eat some? Do you want me near you? Is there something we should be smelling? What was that sound in the background? I mean, they're constantly assessing and wondering and reading a situation. So the most important thing we can do is provide answers as if they're constantly asking. And I want to give an example of that was a woman, a client of mine who's a veterinarian in Florida. And she has one horse and then several other cats and dogs. But she almost always calls about her horse. And when she very first started calling, first of all, I have to admit that when a veterinarian calls, I'm honored because it's not every vet that can grasp animal communication. And so I was very honored that she was even open to it. And she said, oh, yes, I've worked with different animal communicators, and I think it's essential. And yet I learned from her after first couple consults that she wasn't taking what she knew about animal communication and letting that be real for the horse. She was letting it be real for the dogs and cats. But she wasn't letting it be real for her horse, and I wasn't sure what was going on because he would give her information, and then she'd call back, and the next consult, it was as if she hadn't really heard much of what he said and definitely had not applied much of what he said. So what I watched her do was get more and more uptight with her horse because she said, you know, I bought him from Ireland, they shipped him over, I paid a lot of money for him. So there in and of itself is an energy, okay? So there's an energy of high expectations. And then this being comes over and gets off of an airplane and says, who are you? Why am I here? And where did my herd go? And she wasn't considering any of that. So when she started to consider that that would be hard for him and he needed love and he needed to know who his new herd was, she found that she could get him to be much more comfortable in his setting. So then that increased better grooming time. That increased, you know, her safety around him because he's high-spirited. She kept saying, he's so high-spirited, he's so high-strung, maybe he's not the horse for me, maybe I should sell him, maybe I should send him back. She was so caught up in her own energy that during the consult, I would send love to the horse and say, can you just notice that she's the one high-strung, not you? Because he really wasn't high-strung. He was bouncing off of her high-strung energy. And though he was high-spirited and he had a personality, of course, and yes, he made mistakes, but what was going on was she was just caught up in everything she had decided in her head about him and the situation, that when she would take him to a show, she'd get so angry. She says, she would give me examples like, well, we just went to a show. This is how a consult would start. Well, we just went to a show last weekend, and I was appalled. You know, I just couldn't believe the way he performed because he knows how to do this, and he wouldn't even turn right, and he wouldn't do this, and he wouldn't do that. And I asked the horse, and the horse said, well, I didn't like the energy there. There was a lot of scared horses. Or one time he said, a horse had been severely injured in the ring right before I went in, and I was scared of what I was feeling, and I wondered if I was going to get hurt. And then she started realizing, when I'd say that, she said, oh, yeah, there was a horse that was severely injured, and they had to help him out of the ring and all of that. So she started to learn to think like the horse. It took me about 5 consults to get her out of her head and to begin to think like the horse and think what might be important to him, what might he be doing. And then she finally learned how much he read her mind. And she called me for the next consult, and said, "We had the best show. He did everything I wanted, and he had a good time. He didn't just perform. He had a good time." And I said, "What was different?" And she said, "I just knew that he could if I just told him what I wanted, and I got on him, and I smiled." She said, "Terry, I haven't smiled on his back before. I caught myself, and I realized I haven't been smiling on my back, on his back. I've been uptight on his back. I've been nervous. I've been frustrated." So she said, "I let all of that go. I got on his back. I smiled. I was proud of him. We walked into the ring. I thought of everything ahead of time. Okay, we're going to jump over there, and we're going to do this, and this is what you're going to look like watching a movie," and he did absolutely everything. And she was crying on the phone because she basically had a huge awakening of how powerful this being could be with her if she would join him. So that's a very good example of how they do read our minds. And if they're reading our minds and we're nervous or we're confused, or the trainer told us one thing, this is another thing I hear, is the trainer told me to do it this way, but I don't really like doing it that way because he doesn't seem to like it, but I'm doing it that way because that's what the trainer told me, and I'm paying the trainer, and the trainer says to do it this way. So then the horse is reading, "You don't really want me to do it that way, but your head's telling me to do it that way. What should I follow? Should I follow your heart or your head? Because I hear both, I understand both, and I feel both. So which should I be doing?" And it gets very confusing to the horses. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was a fun story. This ties in, and I thought it would be fun, Pam, for you to share as a apprentice and how spiritual animals can be, because horses to me are somehow or another, I don't mean to not honor the dogs and cats of the world or the other animals of the world, but to me horses are of a higher level connected to spirit. And I believe that's partially their wild spirit, their wildness, who they are, but there's also just something magnificent about horses and how connected they are to the spirit world. And so I have a client who I've worked with for many years now, and she has a particular breed of horses, which I'm not remembering the name of right now, but she adores her horses, she loves her horses. And the first time I met her horses, she had two. And when I walked up and met the first one, the first thing he showed me was a man, and I knew that this woman lived by herself, and he showed me abundant love for this man and a sense of duty. And so my job as an animal communicator is to say whatever I get, not figure out if it makes sense or not, not try and in my head say, "Oh, I wonder if that was a previous owner." I knew she had had him his whole life, so it didn't make sense in my head, but I said, "I'm getting this powerful love for a man and this sense of duty." And she started tears coming down her face. She says, "Well, he was my husband's horse, and my husband asked him to please take care of me." And I said to the horse, "Is that what you're talking about?" He said, "Absolutely. I am the man in her life now, and I am here to take care of her after her husband died." And she was so touched by that because she knew he loved her, but he was holding the abundant love for the man as his purpose of taking care of her. And that was just the beginning of a wonderful many years to come as a client. So this particular horse, she often asks him for higher self wisdom, as I call it, or guidance, because he's very connected to the spirit world, and he's also connected to her husband that died. So he will, you know, we'll do consults where we check how's his hooves, how's his belly, how are his teeth, you know, the basics, how's he doing with the younger guy, you know, thank him for teaching the younger horse to behave, and, you know, so we do a lot of basics, and then all of a sudden he will come up with a message, and he'll say, "You know, her house is going to be sold in the next year, and she'll be living elsewhere." And so as an animal communicator, you say whatever you get, and I would tell her things, and she started being blown away at first, and then she was so touched that now she calls on a regular basis for him to give her wisdom. So he's like her little guru. He connects her to her higher self and helps with wisdom. So when I was doing my apprenticeship program, I thought, what a magical horse to take the apprentices to. I mean, they need a chance to meet this wonderful guy. And in the meantime, when I had thought about that and thought I'll do it, you know, at the appropriate time in their training, the apprentices, she got a female horse, and the female horse was pregnant. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to surprise the apprentices with going to this woman's house, and I'm not going to tell them ahead of time where we're going, because it'll be fun, it'll be a field trip, and I'm definitely not going to tell them that the female is pregnant, because I want them to see if they can connect with the baby in the womb. And Pam, would you like to share anything about how that was for you?
Oh, it was mind-blowing. And this is you know, three of us that we knew we could talk to animals, but I had no concept that you could talk to one in the womb. It just, I didn't know that was possible. And he was, I mean, joyful and buoyant, and this little horse is exactly that way. And he told us, basically when he was going to be born, he told us that what his coloring was going to be, what his purpose was going to be. He was absolutely magical. It was one of the highlights of the entire apprenticeship program, because I went home and I was just raving about it, because I did not know that, you know, that there's, you knew there was a spirit there, but you didn't know it was capable of talking and carrying on a conversation and having wisdom, and it was absolutely magical. I'll never forget that.
And I remember watching all three of them, you know, with their little heads going, I don't know if I can do this, I don't know if I can do this, and then watching their hearts open up and their whole being just light up as the spirit took over in the horse and connected with their being. So they're so connected with us. They're connecting ahead of time. And not that puppies and kittens can't do that ahead of time as well, but I've never felt anything as powerful as I do when I feel the horses in the womb.
Yeah,
they're coming through so strong already. And a fun final thing on that story is that when all three of them got the same information, as a matter of fact, on the sex, and they got the same information on his coloring, because one said, I think he's going to be dark but have a little light on him, and then someone said, yeah, he's two-toned, and I think the other one said, yeah, I get that too, kind of a gold color. And as after all three of them said that, I of course, was checking in, and I got that right away. Lucy shook her head and said, no. She said that this breed doesn't really come in two-tone colors. It would maybe he's going to be gold. Maybe he's saying that instead of the darker color of the mom, he's going to be gold. Well, she sent me a photo about 6 months ago, and I was just out there talking with him in person when I was in Colorado in April, and he is two-tone, and he's rare. And he's absolutely stunningly beautiful. In the sunshine, his coat, it glimmers like gold, and then his mane is dark. And Lucy called me one day and she said, I got to send you a photo. You aren't going to believe this. He wasn't two-tone when he was born. And then it changed and it transitioned. She said, he's exactly what your apprentices described. And she was so impressed. She said, please, please tell the girls. She calls my apprentices the girls. Please tell the girls how right they were. So to be able to be open to all possibilities, and not that this is a how to do animal communication, but I wanted to share that story because anything's possible, and horses are so powerful and spiritual that if you open yourself up, then they'll get through to you and help you. They'll be your teachers. They'll guide you in ways that you can't even imagine.
Yeah, to just get out of your head, and that was a huge lesson for me. And I think, you know, for anybody that's practicing animal communication or wanting to get better, because you think, oh, I can't talk to somebody in the uterus. How does that work? They got to get here first. And once I got past my head and said, well, Terry says you could do it, let's give her a go, and we started getting something, it was the magical delight you felt like you did as a child when you learned something new. I was like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely amazing, you know, and to realize it is indeed possible. It was phenomenal.
So if you are working with horses or have horses of your own or just have friends with horses, the most honorable gift you can give them is to be as grounded and as centered as you can be so you're clear-minded and clear in your heart and clear in your spirit, and then meet them from that perspective, and amazing things can happen. I don't know how many of you saw the woman, I'm drawing a blank on her name, and it's been going around the Internet. I know she was on the Ellen DeGeneres show. Stacy, I'm forgetting her.
So the one that rode the horse.
Yes,
she
rides a horse. She did an entire performance with her horse with no reins, no saddle, nothing. And I cried when I think, Pam, you sent it to me.
Oh,
I watched this video and started crying because that is the connection horses want to have with people. And actually, I'll try and find that and send it out to all of you, because if you haven't seen it, Stacy Westenhofer or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just so beautiful because what she's doing is connecting first and foremost heart to heart, and that horse turns on a dime with her. She's not kicking it. She has taught this horse. They are one. When I watched mm-hmm. this, I was like, there it is. There in my view on this computer screen of mine is what I've always felt the horses want, and it's absolutely beautiful. So I will send that to you guys. And at this time, what we're going to do is start some questions, And I received two questions ahead of time, so we'll start with those, and then I'll have you guys unmute, and you can feel free to ask a question one at a time. So the first question is from Jeannie, and Jeannie is herself starting out as an animal communicator, so this is a very good question in general. She says, what do you wish you knew when you began talking to horses that you know now, but didn't know when you started? In other words, what have we learned? Pam, if you can think back about, you know, not specifically when you started as an animal communicator, but when your boys started teaching you, your boy horses started teaching you, how would you answer that?
To be perfectly honest, I've been around horses my whole life, but they are intimidating. And, you know, when they move suddenly, you think, oh, my gosh, I could get squashed. And, you know, people will sometimes go up to a horse and go, okay, I'm not afraid, I could do this. The horse knows that you're afraid. You know, to just own up to that and to just be perfectly honest. Horses are used to being part of a herd, and, you know, they want to be able to rely on you because that means they're the one that doesn't have to go, okay, I have to be on the lookout all the time. So if you can own up to that and be that confident herd leader, they love that. But, you know, be honest with them. They are so appreciative. One time, well, JD, my one horse, gets very playful after winter, and he likes to buck when he runs with me, and he thinks it's amusing. And I finally had to tell him that scares me. You know, yes, I've ridden my whole life, but you're really fast and you're really strong. And one time he bucked at a dead run, and I looked down, and the saddle was 6 inches below me, and I thought, oh, shit, I'm going to fall. And, you know, once I've owned up to it, instead of going, okay, I can work through this, this is, you know, good for me, when I finally said, JD, that frightens me, don't do that, I need all four hooves on the ground, he's like, oh, why didn't you tell me? So now he's totally good with it. But I think the most important thing is to, you know, be perfectly in our heart and perfectly honest. And horses teach you that, and you'll go so much farther with them when you're that way.
And my way of being honest with them is, like I shared earlier, is I love touch. I love to touch horses. I find them magnificently beautiful. So when I walk up to do a consult, I know I'm thinking in my mind, oh, my gosh, I'd love to touch you. You are so beautiful. So I don't reach out and touch them because I'm a stranger, unless they welcome it. But I offer my hands to them, you know, with my palms up, and I introduce myself. I say, I'm Terry. And I let them know I'd love to touch you, but only if you welcome it. And so many times people have said to me, my horse never walks right up to a stranger and welcomes that. And they often walk right up. They'll drop their nose into the palms of my hand. They'll give me their head. They'll hug me. And then, of course, I'm busy swooning, so I'll say, you know, I'd really love to kiss your nose. There's something about kissing horse noses. I don't know. I just like it. And so I'll say, I'd really like to kiss your nose. And they'll say, okay, you can. It's so sweet. So putting out your needs, too, and telling them who you are, and introducing yourself and being honest. And if you're somebody that feels a little afraid of horses, like Pam said, you know, that she had to say she was fearful. So when I've worked with some horses, if they start to get jittery, I'll put a hand on them and just calm them a bit and say, I need you to stand still because I don't feel safe, especially if I'm in a confined space with them. And I'm just here to talk with you, and could you remember your big, is what I tell them. Just please remember your big, and I have to watch my feet. And so they just need reminders. So be very real, be very present, be very honest.
And to tell them what you need. I think that's huge. We as a society feel it's selfish to say what we need. And if you say what you need, they respond instantly. They're like, oh, okay, that's what you need. I can work with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, and the second question that came was from Pam Murdoch, and another great question, and yes, I did get it in time. Thanks for sending it, Pam. She says, I was told by one of the trainers not to look the horses in the eye. The dominant ones do not do this in the wild, and if I do it, it shows that I'm ready to battle or something similar. I have not paid attention because it has not been my experience or feeling. What is the truth? Because I look them in the eyes all the time, especially to get their attention. Am I wrong in doing this?
I think it's all in how you do it. I'm sure that anybody on the line that's worked with horses, you know, if you're working with a horse and you're training it to stop or do whatever, you square your shoulders, you look at it very assertively, yeah, that horse is going to take notice of it because you're showing an assertive, aggressive nature. I think that when you're working with horses and you have softness in your eyes, you know, that is the eyes of the soul. You don't want to wear sunglasses around a horse or any animal because they can't read you. But it's how you're presenting your entire body posture. If you're looking at them with softness, with love, they totally, totally get that. And they can read you easier. So I think it's, you know, if you're coming at them, you know, very forcefully and looking them right in the eye very aggressively, yeah, that, especially to a stallion, that could be considered very aggressive. But if you're, you know, if you're softening your shoulders and softening your gaze, they read that. They totally get it. So it depends on the situation, but if you show love in your eyes, they know where you're coming from.
And also, I believe it offers a feeling of respect for both parties. So you don't have to stare them in the eye, but for me,
exactly.
I always look animals in the eye because I want them to know how much I deeply respect them,
mm-hmm.
especially if I'm about to expect something from them, if I'm expecting them to listen, if I'm expecting them to behave, if I'm expecting them to communicate, then I feel they need to sense the respect that I have for them. Because just like with humans, I mean, if you've got someone in your life, you know, a next-door neighbor or whatever, and all they do is complain and be grumpy, then you're not going to have a lot of respect for them. So if they come over and knock on the door and say, you know, could you not have that car in the driveway all the time? It's bugging me. Well, how are you going to react? Versus somebody that you have respect for and they make a request of you. You when you feel respected and you feel kindness and you feel, you know, love perhaps with the animals, then there's more likely to be accomplishments and solutions to situations. Okay, now I would like to open up the calls to all of you. So if you have a question, please push the 6 button and say your name and ask the question.
I have a, this is Jeannie. I have a question about water and horses.
Okay.
I did a consult a few weeks ago. This woman was training her horse to be jumping and doing competitive shows, and the horse was terrified of water. And what I got from the consultation is that the horse really, really wanted to just hang out with this woman. And it was a whole trust issue. And then one of my friends, and I don't know horses, I've never had a horse, I rode when I was like 10 years old, but she said all horses are afraid of water because they think it goes down, down, down. And is there any... I mean, the horse really, really wanted to bond with her. That was the main thing, and he told me all sorts of things. But I wondered if there's anything, and I know each horse is very different, other than that, with horses and water and jumping. And I also am so touched by horses. I'm so glad you shared all that, because of any animal I've ever communicated with, they just touch my soul more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't know them, you know, personally that well, but mm-hmm. they just move my heart.
They dive right in, don't they?
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you, Jeannie. Okay, Pam, would you like to address that?
Yeah. Horses do have perception problems. You know, they have a blind spot right in front of their eyes that goes, like, 3 feet in front of their eyes. So, like, if you're stepping up to a puddle and you think, well, come on, it's just a puddle, to them, they can't tell whether it's a puddle or whether it's, you know, several feet deep. So they do have a problem with that. So that's actually a great opportunity for this woman to practice trust, you know, where this horse could start relying on her that it's safe to do that. So, yeah, water is a biggie. I have had horses that love to go swimming and think it's great fun, but it is a trust thing because, you know, for one, they can't always tell where the bottom is, and, you know, they're very funny about their footing to feel safe and secure. So, you know, the it could be a sandy bottom or it could be something that could give way on them. So water is a biggie, and I would suggest she, you know, work with, you know, just putting some water in puddles and, you know, letting him sniff and put his head close and feel it and experience it as he walks through, and then, you know, start increasing that. But a lot of it is just going to be his trust in her that she will keep him safe to do it.
Yeah, that's what the horse told me. He just didn't really trust her.
Yeah, and as that comes, he'll, you know, he'll give her a go.
Yeah.
And I would add to that confidence building is key for her to be confident first, because if he feels her being confident, like, you will clear this. You will absolutely clear this. You will jump it. You will clear it. Not to be imagining him, you know, falling in the water or anything he might be fearing, but to be imagining the beautiful leap and landing on, and it's just, you know, it's just another obstacle that he's cleared. So for the humans to be, whatever the situation is with water, to emanate confidence, because then the animal can feel the confidence and be more confident about the situation is not as scary as I thought it might be.
Yeah, and then she becomes more the herd leader, where he could start to rely on her and go, oh, okay, she got me through that, so now I'm ready for the next step because she kept me safe.
Mm-hmm.
So tell her to take little baby steps with that and build on it, and
mm-hmm.
his confidence will increase in her.
Another question, please.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Della. Can I just add one thing about the water?
Absolutely.
Sometimes I've worked through several horses dealing with a reluctance to go into water, and if I get out and go beside them and walk beside them,
mm-hmm.
that's a confidence building thing for them.
Yeah, sure.
And there's something different about being beside them versus being on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
That helps boost their confidence.
What that does is that mimics another horse, because
exactly.
if you were another horse and
another
and
horse
walk,
and not a predator on their back.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's excellent.
Great.
Yeah.
How about a question from you, Della? Do you have any questions?
I do. I've noticed that I ran onto some people in the bedding aisle, and they were talking about their mares that pee in their sheds or pee in their stalls. You know, these are horses that may have turnout all day long, and then they come into a run with a shed, and they'll go pee in their shed. Do either one of you have any sense? Is this a security issue?
It could be. I'm not familiar with that. A lot of times, my two horses, I ask them not to go in the stall as much. Let me change phones real quick when mine's dying. Okay. But they like it because it's soft and it doesn't splatter on their legs. And mares
yeah.
get real funny about that, because when they're in estrus, you know, they can get dirties on their legs, so to speak. So it's a way for them to, you know, wet into something that's soft and absorbent, and
uh-huh.
it's comfortable.
Okay.
And I would add to that with all animals, a lot of times for them to have their scent where they are helps them feel safe.
Yeah,
so that's why, you know, I work with a lot of little dogs, and people will say, why does he have to lift his leg and spritz the house? Because he feels safe. That works for him, because little dogs are notorious, little male dogs are notorious for lifting their leg every so often on the couch or whatever, because they feel vulnerable in their tiny little bodies. And so the only thing that helps them feel safe is to put a little spritz of their scent, and that helps them feel safe. So for some of them, it may be that as well, that it's not like they're consciously thinking, I'm going to hold it, and save it for in there, but it becomes a natural habit to release it in there because it helps them feel more safe and secure, and it gives a message to the other horses, look, this is my space, I'm about to be confined, please don't anybody bug me, I don't want any horses challenging me, I need to relax, I need to sleep now. So it's a way of creating safety.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Do we have another question?
Well, this is Jeannie again. I'm curious what you think about the racehorses and all that's happening with them. Have you ever worked with...
We do have that as a possible question to go into, Jeannie. But before we do that, I wanted to make sure, in case there was any question specific to what we've talked about. Thank you for bringing that up, and Pam and I did talk about that ahead of time. Just want to take one more minute. Is there anybody else that hasn't asked a question that may want to ask something to what we've spoken about?
Could I ask about the spritz that you said put in their stall? Do you do that? I mean, if a horse is
doing that?
But that's why they do what you just...
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm not hearing any other questions, so I guess
it's...
One. Oh, I'm sorry, who is it?
This is Carrie.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi. How can we help a horse emotionally through an injury?
Ah, very good question. How can we help a horse emotionally through an injury? Pam, you want to start?
Well, I would think it would depend on the injury. One would be to obviously make him feel safe and secure and to support him through the healing. Sometimes there's different herbs and things that you can do to help speed the healing and help them feel comfortable while they're healing. But other than that, I'm not real sure what you mean so far. You mean just making them feel safe as they're healing, or?
Well, I've worked with another animal communicator, and she said that my horse was feeling very afraid and that I wasn't going to give her enough time, which isn't the case at all, but she was afraid that I was going to put her down before she had enough time to heal. So
oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a very complicated situation.
Mm.
Fortunately,
often what happens is that
they hear what's being said to you, and perhaps
right.
if there's others in the stables or the vet or whatever telling you to consider that, then she probably didn't come up with that on her own. She probably sensed it or heard it, literally, from somebody
okay.
else who might have said, you know, this is a long journey. You might have to be putting this horse down, or she may never heal or whatever. So they
right.
often will take on a message that's surrounding them somewhere, and then, yes, they will begin to worry about it. That could be what happened. Another thing I would add just about injuries in general is a lot of times when horses are injured, they're confined, and they don't understand it. I was in the stables once to do a consultation, and I turned around, and this big, beautiful horse was tied to this very, very short rope. I mean, probably a foot long. His face couldn't even go left or right from the corner of his stall. And, of course, I reacted inside of myself. I was like, oh, that doesn't look good, and it's not my job to, you know, react and make judgment or decide. So I simply said to the person I was working with when we were done, is this horse tied? And, oh, I'm sorry, I should add that he was pacing, but his head couldn't move, so his body paced back and forth and back and forth. He was going crazy is what he was doing. And so I asked the person, is he tied up like that a lot? And she said, well, he is right now because he's injured. And I said, how long has he been tied up like that? She said, about 3 weeks, because if his injury doesn't heal, it's very serious. So I just took a moment to touch him and offer him some love and let him know how hard that must be. You know, I just looked at him and I was empathetic and I said, I can't imagine how hard that must be for you. But I know you're capable of going elsewhere because animals can do that really well. So if you can just space out and kind of go elsewhere, what's going on is you need some time to let this injury heal. And, you know, as we all know, and this ties in with what we'll wrap up with, the Kentucky Derby, is that if it's a serious enough injury, they do die. They are euthanized. They are put down. They are considered broken and bad and done. And animals in the wild often, you know, do not get hurt nearly as much, of course, as they do in domestic situations, and often can even walk through an injury or heal, or if they come to a place within themselves spiritually that they realize my journey is coming to an end because my body is broken, then they have that opportunity to come to the spiritual place of wrapping up. Whereas, you know, the horse, and I barely heard it, and so Pam and I will talk about this, but I know from the Kentucky Derby I just heard that the horse broke bones in both front legs on the track, and they euthanized. Was it a her? Was it a man?
Yeah, it was a little filly.
Yeah, they euthanized her on the spot. And my first thought when I heard that was not only sadness for the mare, but the devastating emotions for the people and for the other horses that must have been flying through that area. And Pam, why don't you share what you had talked about in regards to injuries like this and expectations on
yeah.
horses?
Yeah, I think, you know, here it's so oriented towards money that we race them too young, and I fully believe, and I've read a lot about that, that they're raced too young before they're fully developed and structurally sound, and you know, their bones aren't meant to be trained that hard, they aren't meant to be raced that hard, and they break down. So it's, you know, we're putting too many expectations on them at too young of an age before their bodies are mature enough to handle it.
And of course, it is big business, and you know, there's that component. I mean, I have some people that have said to me over the years, "Well, horse racing is, you know, those horses get treated better than any other horse because they're pampered and they get the best care and they get the best food and all of that." And yeah, but they also live in a stall, and as Pam talked about earlier in the talk, it's all about balance. And I believe that if a lot of those horses were able to be out and about more and relax and stretch and move in various ways as opposed to the limited forms of movement in a stall, they would be more structurally sound as well. And it's hard for me when I hear somebody say, well, you can't let a racehorse, you know, run around because they might injure themselves or they might hurt themselves on the fence or whatever, and they're way too expensive and too valuable for that. So to me, that is humankind has gotten out of balance with the relationship with the horse. And, of course, when anything is out of balance,
whether it's your tires on your car or your relationship with your horse. When something's out of balance, you're going to know it, and things are not going to go smoothly. So I believe it goes back to the balance as well as the structurally sound issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and with that said, Pam, you're going to do a little wrap-up, and I'm going to do a little wrap-up, and we will be finished.
Okay, one other thing I was going to say about the question earlier with the horse that was injured, you know, explain to them what happened. A lot of times the animal gets frightened, they know there's an injury, and they want to know if they're going to be okay. You know, tell them exactly what's going on with it, what they can expect, if they're going to be on stall rest for however long. You know, it's just like us. If you have the doctor explain to you, you know, yes, this is going to hurt, this is what you're looking at so far as recuperation time, then the animal's like, oh, okay, I didn't know. And they'll be able to handle it a little bit better. So just reassure them. And then just on to just our relationships with our horses. It's like anything else. We get out of it what we put in. I have a friend of mine who's a dear, dear person, but when he's with his horse, he goes on autopilot. You know, he gets the horse out, saddles him up, rides him. The horse does what's asked, no more. When I talk to the horse, he barely talks. He's very short, to the point, you know, because he's not expected to be anything more than something for this man to ride. And this friend never, I hardly ever see him spend any time with just being with his horse. If he's not, you know, grooming it and getting ready to ride it, he doesn't try to bond with him. He's just a horse. And, you know, my own horse, Barnabas, has really saved my life on more than one occasion, and I think it's because we have a bond. I spend time with him. I love him. When he's been sick, I've spent the entire night in the stall, whatever it takes. I cook for him. I seldom cook for my own husband, but there's a bond. I mean, we just have a relationship and a love and appreciation for one another, and I think if you honor them and appreciate them, they're going to return it wholeheartedly, and you're going to get you're going to get a lot more out of it. And to remember, they're all about balance. You know, the most successful performance horses I know are the ones that get to be a horse when they're not in training. You know, let them be a horse. Let them be silly. Let them, you know, buck if they want to when you're not on them. You know, let them play and roll and spend time with them, getting to know them, and not just on their back. You know, spend time knowing that animal because that honors them, and they really appreciate that.
And also the bottom line that I will finalize with is to learn each one. Remember, I want to emphasize that. Learn each horse as the individual they are, and then love them in a very whole manner. Love their whole being, love their spirituality, love their challenges, love their history, love their present day, love their progress, and most importantly, honor their magnificent spiritual self. Because as we receive their guidance and we play with them, we interact with them, we have fun, it's a gift to the heart that doesn't compare. And, of course, if there are more issues or more questions that people have regarding horses, my final statement is they need to talk to a good animal communicator. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank all of you guys very much for being here today, and I hope you enjoyed this talk. And, Pam, thank you so much for being here with your heart and your wisdom on behalf of the horses, and please thank JD and Barnabas for helping us as well. Mm-hmm. Have a great day, everybody.